I like the gavel. All right, I call this meeting to order. It's 1 o'clock. Let's get started.
I don't think your mic is on.
It's not very loud, is it?
It's on, but it's not very loud.
I'll try to adjust the volume.
Okay,
here.
I'm talking for a minute, and she can adjust the volume.
That's better.
All right.
Better.
Good.
Okay. Good.
Jane, would you please call the roll?
Okay. Abramovich. Somebody's got us on hold. Albertson.
I am present.
Enjoy the music. Alexiev. Mondo Padre. Anyone here for Sukumar? I'm going to see if I can turn that down. I just won't be able to hear people say they're here. Brown. C. Chambers. Oh, I'm sorry, Tony. Thank you. And Ken is here. Chambers. Chen. Anyone here for Cheng Fu? Cook. Christine Cook. Okay. Davis. Fallon. Boche Sato. George Bettisworth. Gustafson. Cindy Hardy. Sarah Hardy. Healy. Keegan. Henry. Jensen. Johnston. Jolie. Larden. Lawler.
Here.
Marr. Oh, Jung Ho is here for Wayne Marr. McCackern. Meyer. Nadine. Anyone attending for Elizabeth? Oh, okay, call. Newberry. Chung Sang. Anyone here for Chung Sang? Radenbo. Reynolds. Short. Thanks. Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Webley.
Here.
Windsor. How about Winfrey?
Here.
Yari.
Here.
Zhang. Okay. All right. Anybody online? Who wants to identify themselves? Yeah, I know we've got some folks online, and Karen's here. We have our ex officio coming. Okay, Alex Fitz is here, interim dean of general studies. Past president John Dean, he chairs RAC. Odebu Misra. Anyone here from ASUAF? Anyone here from staff council? Okay, and we have Libby Eddy, our interim registrar. And, okay.
All right, the minutes to our previous meeting were posted online about midweek last week. Are there any comments, suggestions, corrections to those minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. You all have in front of you the agenda for today. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda? All right. Seeing none, the agenda is approved. The Chancellor's status of Chancellor's Office actions. The Chancellor has approved our motion to delete the MAT in Biology program, which passed our Senate unanimously in the last meeting. There are no other motions pending. On to the President's remarks. I had two comments to make to you. One is I thank everyone who participated in this discussion about Blackboard and alternative course management systems. There were some very interesting comments and entries there, and particularly want to thank Orion Lawler and Rob Duke, who provided new information about Moodle. The next step on this is that the comments will go to, not verbatim, but a summary of the comments will go to the Faculty Alliance this Friday. We will discuss the next steps that all three MAUs can take on this matter. I am still working with Bill Wakefield at OIT to get new statistics on UAF use of Blackboard, and I'll also be able to get statistics on UAS because up to this year they were piggybacking on UAF system. So stay tuned on that. If anyone has additional comments, please feel free to add them into the Blackboard discussion online. Just call it a running commentary. Are there any questions on that? All right, and one more heads up to all of you. The Provost has asked Faculty Senate, assisted by Eric Madsen, to start a new conversation about electronic course assessments. And we have not yet done this, but we'll be meeting this week. The mandate is to look again at the options and see if we can come up with a good one for UAF to use. The last time the Senate looked at this was 2 years ago. None of the options were satisfactory, and the Senate became so disturbed by the situation that we passed a motion saying that there must be more research, the administration should support this research, and that nothing should be done without approval of the Senate. That is the process that we're now following. Eric Madsen will be the person the administration is providing to help with the research on these systems. And the Faculty Senate Committee that will handle this is Faculty Development Assessment Improvement Committee, chaired by Franz Meyer. So if you have any comments, suggestions, concerns, talk to Franz. That's the best route right now. Any comments on this? Yes, Jane.
I just wondered, do you know if UAA and UAS use electronic course assessments?
UAA does. They hate it. They have such a horrible response rate that they put disclaimers in their reports saying you can't use this because it's not a statistically valid, et cetera, et cetera. They have trouble using it for anything. UAS uses electronic evaluations in some circumstances. So do we in some circumstances, but not across the board. So we do, among other things, want to take advantage of their experience and what they've found out about these systems.
Thanks.
Yes, Franz.
So just one, I'm chairing the committee, Faculty Development Committee right now. I was not part of the committee when this discussion came up 2 years ago. So whoever has any feedback on this and has valuable information, please send me an email and let me know. If you have any paperwork that you know of or any links that you know of, I could look into to inform myself. I would be very appreciative of this. So please, if you have anything, forward it to me to make sure that I'm representing this correctly.
Thank you, Franz. Any other comments? All right. Remarks from our President-elect, David Valentine.
So first, we just got word. We just got Todd Paris that he will not be able to make the photo shoot this afternoon, so we will not have a photo shoot in the rain. Actually, I guess we'd do it inside if it was. But anyway, no photo shoot today. We'll postpone that until later. The second thing, picking up where Jennifer left off with the Blackboard issue, Carol Gehring, the director of e-learning, has met with me, and we discussed potential ways to get some more information about usability of the various course management systems that are out there, Blackboard, Moodle, Desire to Learn, and Canvas. And she volunteered that this coming spring, e-learning, some of the instructors in e-learning will run some trials of the various CMSs to get some input from both faculty and students about usability for distance delivery, which I think would be a very useful piece of information for us to consider. The second thing that she's volunteered to do is to conduct some usability trials with us, with faculty who are willing to volunteer to try to do some specific tasks on the various platforms, which again she'll get up to speed this coming spring, with hopefully a report of those two studies coming out later on in the spring. So when you hear about that, by all means, please volunteer to try out the some of these tasks and see what you think with respect to usability. The last issue that I wanted to raise is the I attended the Provost Council meeting a couple weeks back and watched a demonstration of the Faculty 180 Annual Activities Reporting Software. I was very impressed with a number of things about it. Number one, it appears that it is likely to save a lot of time with respect to record keeping. It becomes a nice repository for activities that that occur during the school year. It replaces the manila folder in your file rather nicely that all the stuff goes into. It also has some depth to it that I really wasn't aware of in advance of it. Things like being able to attach PDFs of publications, course syllabi, and so forth. So as this comes up, what I would suggest is that when the opportunity arises to try it out, please do try it out. It looks like it's going to be a useful bit of software, but also it's important that we keep in mind what its capabilities are that we like and what its capabilities are that we might have concerns about concerning mission creep. That is, more and more stuff being added to it down the road. And with that, I will conclude my remarks.
Any questions or comments for David? Yes, Debu, go ahead.
How soon are we thinking about replacing Blackboard with something else?
That's a complex question that doesn't have an easy answer. Because it's really this discussion is really being driven by two things. One is the affordability of Blackboard because its costs are increasing, and two is the potential desire of faculty and students to adopt something else. And a lot depends on what we decide we would like. And so really I'm seeing this year as being focused on essentially gathering information about what the alternatives are and how we like them. I think it would be foolish for us to act precipitously with respect to replacing the devil we know with one we don't know. There's one in the back.
Oh.
Could you come up to a microphone, please?
Well,
we need to pick it up on the mic. Thank you.
Yeah, with respect to the record-keeping software, my question is, if we're all going to try it out, can we save that so we, because we're all going to be required to use it for next annual report, right? So if we're going to try it out, can we save whatever we do so we don't have to put it in again?
With permission. Yes, certainly. When it's activated for each individual faculty member, it will be the full package. You will be able to save everything that you enter and begin preparing a report for submission in subsequent years.
We do have another seat up here. So the next item on the agenda is the Chancellor's remarks. Chancellor Rogers is traveling and was going to call in from Minnesota. Is he on the line? All right, we'll postpone this until he's able to join us. Provost Henricks, would you like to go ahead?
Well, the main thing I wanted to talk to you a bit about was the Board of Regents meeting held a couple of weeks ago. I believe the Chancellor will be giving you an update on some broader issues, including some facility decisions and so forth at the meeting, so I won't reiterate that. But I want to talk a little bit about what's happened in the Academic Affairs Committee, subcommittee of the Regents, and the discussions that are going on there. As you know, the statewide system has been working on the Strategic Directions Initiative for some time. That has resulted in a number of directions that the system will be taking, including student success and achievement. And that really is the area that the Board of Regents is focusing on. There are several other areas of importance. For instance, partnerships with communities, partnerships with K-12 education, research, and so on. But it's the student success and achievement that has really caught the attention of the Regents and the President. Certainly, the chancellors of the three universities, the provosts of the three universities, are working to get more attention paid to the other areas because although student achievement is very important to all of us, it's not everything that this university is doing or that's important to this university and its role in the state of Alaska. However, the attention on student achievement is something that I think is going to be requiring all of us to work on that aspect of what the university does in a variety of ways. And I just want to bring out some of the concerns that the Regents and the President expressed repeatedly, not only in this meeting but in previous meetings. One is the role of remedial education. Now, I understand that what we do here is developmental education, which isn't exactly the same. But there have been a number of national studies recently that have called into question the benefits of remedial education and the approaches that universities have been using in the past. And I think that those studies have some merit as well as some deficiencies. What I'm urging at this point and what I'll be working with faculty in the future on addressing is how can we demonstrate to the President's and the Board of Regents satisfaction that what we do in this area is important and needed and effective, and if we find by our examination of what we're doing that it's not as effective, not as good for students as it could be, I hope that we will work on improving it so that it can do the best things for students that it's possible to do. Another area of great concern to the Regents is the issue that comes back over and over again, transfer credit. Now, the Regents have, I think, understood that it's not really the transfer of credits that's the issue, but rather what those credits count for, whether a course that's transferred from another university actually counts toward a degree requirement. As all of you know, those issues are extremely complicated. There's no simple answer to will this course count toward my degree. It depends on the degree. It depends on the course. But we're, I think, going to be encouraged, probably strongly, to work with our colleagues throughout the UA system to make at least the movement of students among the three universities in the system more seamless and transparent than it is now. Not, mind you, that it's all that difficult, I think, for the majority of students right now, but it attracts the Regents' attention. The third issue that comes up many times at Regents' meetings is, are we using our resources effectively and efficiently in the broadest sense? And the particular question that we've reported on now, I think at virtually every Board of Regents meeting for the past 2 years in some way, is how are we conducting program review? Are we conducting it rigorously and effectively? And once we conduct the program review, are we using it to allocate our resources most appropriately? I've reported on that a number of times. I believe that I've demonstrated that we are working on this efficiently and effectively. However, it's an issue again that's going to be repeated over and over again, and we're going to need to have good answers, cogent answers, clear answers to the questions that the regents pose about this. So that's my report, and I'd be glad to answer any questions. Todd, please go ahead.
How are you assessing that? Is it just a matrix for a bunch of stuff, or is it just the number of graduates and programs, the number of students and enrollments in classes, all the above? I guess it's always an issue, especially for the rural campuses, because it seems to be not all-encompassing of success sometimes.
Right. The first thing that needs to happen is to determine our definition of success, and we have a number of different ones, but we may need to expand that definition. Currently, we have the opportunity, because they've changed the performance reporting system, both at the State Office of Management and Budget level and at the system-wide level, we have the opportunity to define our own measures of success. There are some that are given to us, mind you, so we don't get to define everything, but we can add to the required reporting. And our standard measures of success right now are ones that you're probably familiar with. There's freshman retention, there's graduation rate at 6 years or 3 years for associate and certificate level programs. One we have added recently is satisfactory academic progress, which is the same definition as is used for financial aid, and we feel that one is important because it determines whether or not students are eligible for many kinds of financial aid. And so we're going to be tracking that for students. Persistence is one we're not currently using for statewide reporting, but it may be a more appropriate one for some of our rural campuses, and I'd certainly be glad to consider including that. But really the point of my response is, if rural campuses have the measure of success that you would like us to use, or the two or three measures of success that you would like for us to use, then certainly let me know. Explain how it would work better for your students than the ones that are being used currently.
Any other questions? Debu, yes.
This is more like a comment than a question. The faculty need to find some time, additional time, to come up with good, solid measures, you know, so that you get a proper feedback. And UAF, UAA, UAS, we are a research university predominantly. And so my request would be that faculty time utilized to come up with these measures, you know, for each program be recognized, and the faculty given some breather to come up with measures that are really important, because at this point we are going in a strategic direction that is accounting for accounting for student success, and the faculty need to have some time to evaluate.
So you're, for instance, asking for workload credit for that sort of work? Yeah. That's mostly in the purview of the individual deans, but that's something I can bring up at Dean's Council and discuss.
Cecile.
Were there any particular resources that the regents were concerned about that we may or may not be using appropriately?
there were two things that came up at this particular meeting, although they do vary a bit from meeting to meeting. One was a request from the regents to specifically indicate where any resources that were freed up by programs that were discontinued, where those resources were being reallocated. And we gave, I think, a sufficient answer to that question. The other is a broader brush, and there was a request from a regent to provide for every program that we offer. The ratio of student credit hours generated to FTE faculty. And he wanted us to examine that in some detail as a measure of program effectiveness or efficiency. That one we're not going to provide in that form after further discussions with the regents. But it's an indicator, I think, of the kind of information that they think is appropriate. We know that that would be, first of all, a very hard number to generate. I mean, think of the civil engineering department. I think they have 6 or 8 different programs. How would you figure out that number? But the other issue is that's not the only measure of the value of a program. It's something that worth considering. But there are programs that are going to be valued regardless of that ratio. So, but that's there. Most of the people on the regents are people with a background in business and that kind of area, and so they look at financial metrics as an important measure of whether a program is successful or not. Cindy.
I appreciate you using the word developmental, by the way. Were the regents made aware of any of the data that we've been generating out of our department? It's relatively new, but it does point to some of the success rates of the developmental classes.
I didn't have the report at the time that I was attending the regents meeting, but I have gotten it since then and read it. I think that we are ultimately, or maybe not ultimately, is too long a term, in the not-too-distant future, I think we are going to want to put together a shorter report that illustrates some of the key points of the data that you've provided.
Yeah, we've actually put that together. I'll get it to you.
Oh, okay. Good.
All right. Is the Chancellor on the line?
Yes, I am. I was able to listen to the last bit of Susan's presentation and then the question and answer that followed.
Great. Would you like to go ahead and make remarks to the Faculty Senate?
That would be great. First, let me apologize for not being able to attend in person. I took outside the space to visit with some foundations and then for the launch of the Sekuliak on Saturday. And I apologize for any airport background sound that you may hear. The Board of Regents, a couple of important meetings coming up, the November budget meeting in Anchorage, and then December meeting. There'll be several items that we'll want to deal with the board. I would really like to encourage members of the Faculty Senate to attend and to talk about the issues that are important to you. I think that the board listens to faculty in a different way than they listen to administrators, and when we talk about the issues of shared governance, it's important that they understand who it is we share governance with. And so issues such as the test performance measures, issues such as how we carry out our mission and the tripartite mission and the importance of research, particularly to UAF as a research university, I think they need to hear that from you as well as from us. So I'd encourage faculty attendance as possible and testimony relevant to the Strategic Directions Initiative and then relative to the budget as well. I'm finalizing appointments to the Student Diversity Task Force. Alex Fitz has agreed to chair that task force, and the appointment letter should be out this week. I have not yet received all of the nominations for the Women's Center Advisory Committee, Permanent Advisory Committee, and we'll try to finish that up as I travel this week. The last the Board of Regents meeting last month was pretty favorable, I think, to UAF, allowing us to move forward on a variety of projects. But I would share, some of the issues that Susan raised. The board is consistently focusing on outcomes and really steep to completion of what we do, and I think we're going to hear more and more calls for accountability, productivity measures, and that creates a unique challenge for, I think, for our research university, where we don't account for everything we do based on students, but on the creation of new knowledge, the creative activity, and we're going to need to find ways to paint that picture in a way that the board and the public fully understand the role of a land-grant university. I take that as part of my role, and I know that in terms of telling that story, and I hope you can join me in doing that. And with that, one more item. Just want to say thank you again for the Faculty Senate tackling the general education revitalization. As I said, at Convocation, I think that's the most important transformational process going on at UAF. I know it's a lot of work, and I appreciate what you're doing, and I think Susan and I stand ready to help you in any way that you need us. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions that members of the Faculty Senate may have.
Are there any questions for the Chancellor? All right. Seeing none, Chancellor Rogers, thank you very much for your remarks.
Thank you, and I'll be there in person next month. Thanks.
All right. Move on to the next item in the agenda, old business. There is a series of four motions up for consideration. We will vote on these today. These all have to do with reapportionment of Faculty Senate and the way in which seats are assigned to the different academic and research units. The first motion up for consideration is the motion to amend the bylaws requirement that all represented units have at least two senators. This is attachment 185/1 in your agenda. This is unchanged from the last time you saw it. Is there any discussion on this item, on this motion? Front.
Before we, before you go forward and vote on this, I wanted to bring up a few points that I want everybody to consider before you vote yes or no on this. So I think there are a few, I understand where the motion comes from, and I think this is an important topic to discuss, but we also have to think about whether we really want to get rid of the limit of two votes per unit. I think there are good reasons to have for having two people represent every unit, some of which have to do with an alternating of new and old faculty members. So you have always you can make sure that you have one experienced member that is representing your group while a second one comes in and is sort of learning how the game is played and what to pay attention to. So I think from a having a educated representation of your unit, it makes sense to have an alternation of new and old representatives in the unit. So by dropping that requirement, this is sort of going away to some degree. And because we know that a lot of that in many cases younger faculty are encouraged to join the Faculty Senate, they may have a hard time initially to represent the unit correctly. So I think that's something we should think about, given that this is an important important organ of the university, an important part of the university, and having every unit represented correctly, I think, is important here. A second component I want to bring up is that I have approached so two of the units that are on the sort of brink of getting losing one of those faculty is the Geophysical Institute and IARC. And in the last month, I've talked to the directors of both of those institutes and want to relay to you that they are very interested in keeping both seats for the reason of representation, one of them being what I just mentioned, the alternation of senators, and another one coming from having to do with sort of my third point is that some of the units that will be affected by this are units that are really fairly large, but are considered to be small in terms of what, you know, how many faculty are counted to their unit. So, like, both the GI and IARC have a large number of faculty, some of which they'll have an appointment, like a quarter-time appointment with a college. So they don't count as part of the GI, and they don't count as part of IARC when it comes to these calculations. So by removing that rule, these large research units may be further de-emphasized in the Faculty Senate. I'm not sure if that's something we want. So I think there are a few things you should think careful about and weigh the incentive of doing this versus, you know, the cause it may create. I'm not saying we should not go this way, but maybe we should consider reiterating this issue a little more and make sure that we don't do anything we may regret down the road.
Anyone else? Cecile?
I may have misunderstood, but if faculty in the research institutes have academic appointments, they are represented through their academic appointments. So you could also then argue that if students like the GI have more seats than their full-time faculty, that then they have, they're overrepresented in some way.
Well, if you are appointed with, say, CNSM, you are representing CNSM, not the GI, which has separate issues as a college rather than a research institution. So the issues that are that you represent for the CNSM may be different from the one the GI is interested in. So you're not counting as a representative of the
GI. But I think a lot of the issues faculty would face would have to do with their dual appointments and things like that. So, they are being represented in Faculty Senate, which kind of gets at the larger issues, not necessarily the unit issues.
Yeah, so that's a discussion to have, I think. So we have to think about this carefully. That's really getting, if we're harming these research institutes even more. So theoretically, you're supposed to represent the unit of the college, not the research institute. And that may not be the same thing.
Todd.
So I guess I need personally educated, I guess, and I don't know if anyone else does, but I think maybe some clarification as to how joint appointments need to be represented in terms of clarification. So,
all right, so point of clarification then. When reapportionment is done, the faculty with split appointments who have any part of their appointment in an academic unit, in other words, if they are tenure track, or term faculty, they are counted in the academic unit. And the rationale for this is that that is where their promotion and tenure is located, and that's where they are evaluated. This means that those faculty with joint appointments in CNSM and the Geophysical Institute, for example, are all counted in CNSM. This was Franz's point, that there are many people who participate and do research in the GI who are not counted when we set the number of seats for the GI in the Faculty Senate. Is that clear? Todd?
Maybe kind of it's getting more clear, and I think I understood that part. But if I got a joint appointment, just for example, if I got a joint appointment in from a rural campus to some a place, you know, Sunrise or something or whatever, and I could be assessed by both, Where would my loyalties lie, I think, is what...
It's not an issue of where your loyalties lie. It's an issue of... Okay. The way it's determined is that whichever unit is the locus of your tenure, that is the unit that through which you're represented. Yes.
Not a very simple and practical consideration for having two seats for each unit is people travel, especially at research institutes, and having a sub is very convenient, basically.
Ken.
I think think we need to look back at the history of how this two-person, two-faculty center minimum came into being. February of 2006 was when this was created, and it was created to solve a problem, the problem being a lack of continuity when you only had one senator. What the two-senator minimum does is allow staggered appointments. Every year in schools with two people, one senator is up for re-election, so you have one continuing member and one new member. This ensures that at least one senator from the school or from the unit understands all the issues that have been discussed in the last year and are currently being discussed. So it was for creating a staggered election process and assuring continuity of representation. And I don't think that has been, that problem has gone away such that it doesn't need to be addressed by this. I think that that problem would reappear immediately if we went to a one-person per unit representation. And for that reason, I would hope that people would vote to stay, vote this motion down so that the units would have two concurrently, could continue to stay with the two. I think it's very important for continuity purposes.
Cecile.
I understand that issue, but I do also think that the representatives, the senators that are elected and that end their term have a responsibility to communicate with their colleagues who are coming in to ensure some of that continuity. So I do see that as an argument, but I think that to me that is not a strong enough argument for two senators, because I think that should be handled, can be handled in a different way.
Yes, Julie.
I just wanted to clarify the impetus here was that you have very small units that might have trouble filling both seats, right, on a regular basis. If that's really the impetus behind this, can't you make it a choice for the unit? If you're low enough that you could lose one seat, your unit can decide. And if they feel really strongly about needing two units for continuity purposes or representation units, they can keep them, and if they feel really strongly the other way, then they can choose that themselves.
That is always an option for the unit. What has tended to happen, however, is that if there aren't enough people interested in serving on the Faculty Senate to fill all the seats, others are recruited, or people will step forward who would not necessarily have been the choice of their colleagues, but as the one volunteer, they take the seat. And that may work fine, but it's not. What has happened in the past is that the unit does not actually make a decision there. They don't make a decision to have just one representative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, I'm suggesting that maybe that would be the change, that you could let them choose.
Any other discussion comments? Yes, Orion.
So I'm definitely going to be voting against the bylaw changes, and I think part of the issue here, right, is that people like Franz, right, 75% GI, 25% CNSM, he's counted, right, in the tenure granting institution, even though I suspect most of the time you're in your office in WERB, and I mean you seem like GI to me, maybe that. I think we'd really want to encourage GI people to be able to teach a class, be able to actually come and interact here, and to not lose faculty center representation every time for the GI every time they do that. So I'm worried about the incentives of this thing. Actually, it might be that the fact that the GI has some sort of fictitiously small number of actual faculty, it's actually a much larger number of faculty. It's just that they're not counted under the GI under our current rules. And it might be the way to fix this is just to change the rule around. So if you're, it's just whatever your majority appointment is, that's where you're for apportionment purposes at least. But I think there are definitely lots of other, ways to solve this problem.
Yes, Ken.
I'd like to rebut a point that the continuity issue isn't a big enough issue. Well, back in February of 2006, it was over the past year is a big enough issue, and that is exactly why this two-person minimum was put into place. And I believe at that time they probably had a lot more experience with this than we do now. And unless we can find some reason why that continuity issue would not appear, I really believe that it still is an issue like it was back in 2006 when this thing was put into place.
Anyone else? Yes, Dibu.
I know I can't vote or anything, but I can make I can ask something. We have faculty that are pure research faculty, 100%. We have also faculty that are term appointment and not tenure track. So how are they represented by the faculty in the faculty senate? That's, for example, I'm saying INE, Institute of Northern Engineering, has a bunch of faculty that do not belong to the college, okay, or the academic unit. I don't know if they're represented here or not.
When we did the last reapportionment for faculty senate, and I did it, so I remember the details. There was one member in IAB who did not have an academic appointment somewhere.
No, not IAB, INE, Institute of
INE.
Northern.
Yeah. Yeah, and INE, we initially started to separate them, but it was pointed out to us that the structure of how INE operates did not warrant making a separate unit for INE. It's a structural problem. One of the requirements for having separate representation on the Faculty Senate is that the director of the institute needs to report directly to the provost. INE is housed within the college, and there are other institutes like that as well. So that's the reason why INE was not split out.
Well, in that case, those faculty are disenfranchised from being represented in the Faculty Senate. I can tell you that much now. Not that I'm, not that I'm trying to influence anybody here or anything, but they are not being represented, period.
Yes, go ahead.
One other consideration is that when you have two faculty sitting at this table, we hear the same things, but we understand them differently, and discussing that afterwards and representing what goes on here to the faculty at our college is also important to get the different perspectives that two faculty members might have.
Yes, Franz?
Just one last thing. First of all, I want to apologize. I didn't want to cause the discussion on the apportionment of the Faculty Senate. So I think maybe instead of removing the two-person requirement, maybe we should do something that we have already basically done with the GI and IARC, which are two of the problem institutes in a sense that they have a low number of people that can represent them, and there might be an issue with how do you find people that are interested. I think if instead we are creating more communication back to the to those groups to make clear to everybody how important this faculty senate is for them, and create more interest in that. And we have already done that. We have made created awareness in IARC and the GI that this is an important part of their life, it's influencing their role in the university. I think if it's probably on us to make sure that they understand that this is really important and that being represented here is important. And instead of cutting people down, we do some grassroots education back at our institutes to make sure that we get the right representation of people that are interested and that everybody knows that this is important and not just another meeting you have to go to. So maybe that solves the issue that may have initiated this, that it's hard to find the people from the small unit, and at the same time make sure that we don't run into issues like in 2006 that people didn't know the ropes basically because they come in brand new and have to take the full burden.
Any other comments?
Here.
Hey, I'm Georgina Gibson. I'm an alternate for IARC. More of a point of clarification, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, but when I read this, I understand that you want to reduce the requirement for small departments to have two senators. But coming from IARC, where we have two senators that are willing representatives and want to fulfill that role, does would this amendment automatically mean that we could only have one? So I don't understand. I'm not. So the way I read it, it sounds like, okay, if you're a small unit, you only have to have one. I understand that, but where I are, can we have two and we want to? Would this amendment, if it passed, mean that we could only have one? I didn't get that from this.
So to clarify, the smallest units would end up with one, because right now there are four units that have two instead of one as a result of this rule. The two smallest units right now are IARC and the Geophysical Institute. And so what would happen is the calculation would revert to pure proportions of people without a floor on the number of faculty senators you would have. So yes, if this passed, it is highly likely that IARC and the GI would go to one senator.
In that case, I'll add my voice to the comments you've already heard, in that if you have a department that has two willing representatives, I would encourage you to not take that away.
Thank you, Georgina. Anyone else? All right. Seeing no more discussion, let's vote on the motion. We'll do a voice vote first and see if that is decisive. Do we have anyone on the line, Jane?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. So all in favor of this motion, which would change the rule by doing away with the rule of two senators, all in favor of this motion, signify by saying aye. All opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Any abstentions?
I wanted to
one abstention. All right, the motion fails. And we move on to the next one. The next one, I will point out, was written with the first in mind in order to compensate for something that would have happened if the Faculty Senate had passed the first motion. This motion says, the UAF Faculty Senate moves to amend the bylaws of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Faculty Senate, Section 1, Article 3, Membership, Subsections A and B, pages 13 to 14. This amendment increases the target number of elected seats in the Faculty Senate. As I said a moment ago, due to that minimum two senators rule, there are right now four units that have an extra senator. So the way the calculation is done is that the 35 elected seats in the Senate are apportioned among the eligible units in UAF. And then those units who end up with just one representative or one senator are then bumped up to two. So instead of 35, which is the target number, the number used for the calculation, we have 39 because there are four units who have an additional senator. Is that clear? All right. So if we had passed this motion to do away with the two senators minimum, then the size of the Faculty Senate would have dropped to 35. This motion was written to address that eventuality. This motion would increase the number of the target number for the calculation to 39, which is the current size of the Faculty Senate. Is there any discussion on this? Mike. I don't personally believe there is, but I'm open to discussion on this. Cindy? Well, we have a motion to table. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. I understand it. That means we move on.
Well, we have to vote.
Yeah, we just tabled it. Oh, we have to vote on the motion to table it. Okay. So... Oh, good. Thank you. I haven't done one of these before. So all those in favor of tabling this motion, which means setting it aside and we won't deal with it, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Abstentions? That's unanimous. The motion is tabled. Thank you, Mike. The third motion
is attachment 185/3. This motion is essentially a housekeeping to clean up the bylaws of the Faculty Senate. It reads, the UAF Faculty Senate moves to amend the bylaws of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Faculty Senate, Section 1, Article 3, Membership, Subsection A, page 13. This amendment modifies the bylaws regarding non-voting members of the Faculty Senate to conform with recent and current practice. Essentially, we have for many years not followed the details of this bylaw. Instead, the practice has drifted. The motion would set into the bylaws the way the Faculty Senate has actually handled our non-voting seats over at least the last 6 or 8 years. Is there any discussion on this? Seeing none, let's vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Abstentions? The motion passes unanimously. Okay, we're picking up speed. All right. The fourth motion. The UAF Faculty Senate moves to conduct reapportionment of representation among the qualifying units at UAF. As you see in the rationale, this is on the request of the library's faculty, who are interested in having separate representation on the Faculty Senate. This means that we would request data on the number of qualifying faculty from the provost's office. They will use the data as of mid-October. We would receive the data in early November, and the Faculty Affairs Committee would conduct the calculation, which is at this point is a very simple calculation. Not a lot of work involved. We don't yet know how this would come out. That's one reason I would like to vote on this motion before we see the data. Would anyone like to speak on this motion? Yes, Peter.
Just a clarification. It says in here about the library faculty are now separate from the CLA. Are they completely 100% library and have got no joint appointments anywhere?
Karen, would you answer that, please?
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions? All right, let's vote on the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? The motion carries unanimously. We will do a reapportionment. Thank you all. All right. Todd Paris is not here to do the photo shoot. New business. Sorry. Yeah, jumping over it. New business. We do have a new motion to consider. Is there someone from Curricular Affairs here at the moment who would like to handle this motion at the Faculty Senate? All right, I recommend then that we take a break now. Reiner Newberry will be here shortly after 2 o'clock, and he is the chair of this committee and can present the motion. So we break now, and we will reconvene in 10 minutes, at 10 minutes after 2. Thank you.
We definitely could get into trouble.
No, he's doing fine.
The deans and directors decide they want to game the system and
just start like fragmenting groups, and they figured exactly how many. I mean, you could pack the Senate fairly easily, actually, with a minimum of 2.
Well, you know, and with the First Amendment, I think we sort of felt pressure to vote on it, but now I think people really are going to be represented, and I actually like the idea of saying, okay, you can be represented in one or the other one. Most of your appointment is GI or IR, then,
yeah.
You know, and then, but now they're being double counted.
Well, only because I get rounded up to 2. Yeah. And there are, I guess, with libraries splitting off, and research institutes, actually, the more there are, you know, there are benefits to that, that you have more potential to have, you know, a little director, and like, I'm a director, awesome, right, even though you only have, like, 6 faculty.
think they do.
Yeah, if it gets out of control, actually, I think probably the thing to do is to change around so that you don't call for separate representation unless you're at 1.5 or get into trouble. Eligibility for representation at all, right? If you say that if you would only qualify for one and we're going to round you up to two, well, maybe, you know, you should merge with other, because there's a lot of really tiny little Estes. You see, in a sense, it's a little tiny thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then
Yeah.
Great out
of the
attack.
Yeah, it
sounds.
Actually, Proposition 3 means that you get no help from the firm. I got one from Fred Meyer for about $80. Actually, I noticed at home, I got one from home, too. And not only, I get them mostly for the summer. That's just totally unlivable, right? And it'll make it so it's like, wow, you smell the smoke, and you go outside, and it's like, oh, my eyes are burning.
No,
I can't breathe. But I found, like, even if you fry tacos or something, right, and the whole house is kind of smelling, you know, really greasy,
right.
Stuff is getting, like, landing on every surface, I kick the sucker on, and it's totally, it's not down to nothing about half an hour. I want one in my office and one at home. In the summertime, I'll have it running at home, and I'll think, yeah, it's not that bad up there. And you get outside, and it's like, holy cow, get in the office. By the time you're at the office, you know, I'm off.
Yeah, I'll go along with that.
And then trying to suffer through work. It's just like, man. By contrast, the winter doesn't exist.
Yeah, whatever. Right.
What is it, induced asthma or something? Or they have there's some term for this where, like, you're just exposed to really bad air and there's some sort of immune response to the lungs.
Yeah,
that
might be, this is pretty uncommon.
And we're not one of these.
This makes me nervous, too.
I mean, that's why
you're nervous.
I've been here since my second year.
Having to talk into the mic.
You know,
nobody would be there are other things I'd like to do, but I don't mind.
And the word that you're going to, I don't know, misconjugate a verb, right? Put an infinitive or something. It will be your mark of shame that you will carry with you. You'll seem really fearless, Cecile. And bam, put it out there.
One of the
that's good, and being able to express them. I think a lot of people have strong opinions. It's just, you know, feel sort of ashamed of open.
I was concerned that a really small unit would have, like, you know, if there's only 9 people in the unit, they'd be eligible for 2 senators, but that means 9 people. So a third of the unit would be falling back to the Senate every year. And that was the concern, that it would be a burden, that it would be hard to get people, it would be hard, you know, or you'd end up collecting the community, right? But, I mean, my point is
you've heard of the Milgram experiment? Apparently on the conscience between expectations, that they expected that most people would refuse to actually torture somebody, right, like, and that discovering that, like, I mean, virtually everyone does, right, and just continues to follow directions. And they had, like, they had one test subject that just said, like, I'm not going to do that. And she was from Germany, and, I mean, she had a really bad experience of falling back directions.
Well, you know, never conducted in the early 60s.
They realized that, And just by asking people, right, they say no if they'll get divorced or anything.
No,
somebody with a clipboard says you're required to do this.
Very pointed.
Yeah.
And another issue that has come up
don't think they're relative to the rural faculty, the regional review process,
no,
whether
no,
that
it's scary.
I'm dealing with it today. That has television. The regional process, that's kind of an equivalent.
The other problem that Zeta has,
it's something much more benign.
They
had a, just on NPR, obvious cheating. So you'd have like a math test, test, test everybody, right? There's like 100 questions. After like 30 seconds, somebody turns theirs in, and you're like, you're required to like do your best, right? And somebody turns it in and leaves, right? Or like they clearly didn't do it right, or they just wrote down the answer wrong or something. And then looking at how often people will, you know, look up the answers and they're just, you know, do all the calculations on their cell phone or something. And if they had, so they had like, I forget what institutions this was, but like two major rivals. And if you were doing institution A, and you had somebody in institution A, that basically is the sort of, you know, ringer, obvious cheater, then cheating, amount of cheating went way up because they've now set the social norm as being get it done and get the heck out of here. This is a waste of time. And if you had institution B, if the rivals did that, instances of cheating actually went down because they've just said, yeah, B people do it, but us A people, we actually do it right. So you have a sort of anti-example of that.
We're just so easy to control.
I notice in class, right, you kind of have to set the social norm as like, yes, you should ask questions, yes, if you know, and if I notice nobody's asking any questions, right, you just try and set up a situation, or you ask them a question, you're like, please speak, right, this is okay. Just say nothing and stare at the blank faces until somebody's willing to.
Oh, yeah, I will.
And it's amazing how powerful that, you know, that people sort of get into the norm is, professor talks, you listen, professor talks, you listen. And then it's just like, okay, right, you know, and of course, what is Boltzmann's amps? Nothing. What is 2 plus 2? Nothing.
Right.
That's a tough one to... Okay, John, what do you have for breakfast this morning?
Yep. Exactly. We had large
Well,
Jennifer and I exchanged some emails about that. Well, actually, I think you were in on those. About, we can go ahead and do this because it just looked like it was just a bad idea. And the conclusion was, it's a good idea for us to know why we're doing what we're doing, so let's go ahead and do it anyway.
Nobody came prepared.
Never had the guts to do
that.
And I saw Ryan at Curriculum this year. He said
when
he
gets
to try to have a
on the battery, too.
Yeah, down. So we can start in on
the... It always scares me. It's going to run out of juice halfway through. Like, you have half an operating system.
Right. Quite on schedule.
That's all I needed.
What
else? So you haven't done the photo shoot.
Not the good hand.
Well, except Todd wasn't here for some reason, so they were giving the photo shoot.
That has been a really misleading program.
Well,
if it really... Oh, okay.
I didn't know where
the door for
yeah, when I was having my coughing attack, I went up there in case it all fanned
out. Morning, although it's feeling more and more
and
like
since I would have never done it in the setting, but I've been trying for about 12 hours to download.
Oh, okay.
What happened? It's not working.
Computers are such a waste.
Saving grace might be as
every aspect of it, too.
I nearly given up on it.
Once it's finally installed, then... some crucial applications use every day will not work. And then you're like, okay, so I need the update for that.
Not on.
There's no update.
Hello? Everyone, please have a seat and we'll resume the meeting.
Maybe that's why you're not that
smart.
All right, those of you who were here last year will remember that there was a discussion about the schedule for commencement. And yes, we never made a decision, and yes, that is still before us. And so the current situation, summarized for everyone, is that the May commencement in 2013 will go on as usual. What we're talking about now is May 2014. The decision on how this commencement will be scheduled will be made midwinter this year. So we have 2 months or so to think about this, talk about this, try to come to a consensus. If the Faculty Senate has a consensus opinion, that opinion will carry strong weight in the decision that the Chancellor will make on this. If we don't come to a consensus, then the decision will be made on other grounds. Okay. So there are two questions before us. One is whether to move commencement from Sunday to Saturday. The other question is whether to hold a separate ceremony for awarding master's degrees and possibly PhDs in that as well, but we have to qualify that statement. The main point is the master's degrees. So I want to summarize what the pros and cons and issues are here. I will post all this on an online Google Groups discussion, and we'll commence talking about it online. But I want to introduce it here, let you all make any quick remarks that you'd like to, and then we'll have an extensive discussion online. Okay? So the point about moving commencement from Sunday to Saturday, there are two considerations to start off with. First of all, if this is done, we want to be sure that the move does not decrease faculty participation in commencement. It's important that faculty continue to participate. We'd like to increase the participation if possible, but certainly not do something that causes it to decrease. There are no schedule conflicts with community events, so that's not a consideration. The main factor behind this idea is that there's a heavy staff presence at the commencement ceremony. This is Saturday and Sunday in order to pull all this off. If commencement can be moved to Saturday, then the staff will work one weekend day rather than both. The same would be true for faculty, especially those faculty who are not involved or who are involved in the rehearsal. Okay. There is another moderately important factor, and that is that travel by family and friends of the graduating students would be easier if they could travel home on Sunday, on a weekend. Not all of them can do that with a Sunday commencement ceremony. So those are the main reasons for considering a move from Sunday to Saturday. Then the second one is to have a separate ceremony for awarding master's degrees. The point here is that the students who receive master's degrees get essentially the same level of recognition as those receiving bachelor's and associate's degrees, whereas to many of the faculty and to some of the administration, receiving a master's degree is a higher level effort and deserving of special recognition. And so there's so we're looking for a way to increase that recognition. There were a number of ideas discussed last year in the Faculty Senate. The one that's proposed here is to hold a separate master's ceremony, probably on the same day as commencement, and then, and this is still all a conceptual level, have the master's degree recipients and the PhD degree recipients march in the main ceremony. Okay, and there are pluses and minuses associated with that, but there are with every system we could devise. So for consideration, here's a possibility. We might be able to hold all of the commencement events on Saturday, have the rehearsal in the morning, the student picnic with the chancellor at lunchtime, The main commencement ceremony is in the late afternoon, and somewhere in midday to early afternoon would be a separate master's ceremony that may or may not include PhDs. There's a reason why we would not want to have two completely separate ceremonies. We still want the graduate level students to participate in the main one because this is a research university. And the master's and PhD students are a signature part of UAF, and they're a very important part of showing what UAF is to both the community and to the bachelor's and associate graduates and et cetera. So the PhD and master's students will not be dropped from the main ceremony. The question is whether we can devise a way to increase the recognition of the master's students without lengthening the main ceremony. So having this separate mini ceremony for them and then asking them to march in the main one with their hoods already on, that would be a compromise solution. So, as I said, I will put the details of all of this online in the Google group discussion forum. But are there any comments or questions at this point? Yes, Cecile. Yeah, or are the disincentives so big that we don't do it?
Yeah. I guess along those lines, I wanted to make sure that the session would be broad enough, not just to consider that option of a separate master's ceremony, but other options. For instance, making the regular ceremony a little bit longer so that you could recognize master's students in a slightly different way.
You're welcome to include that in the discussion. That is one of the things we talked about last year, and we can continue that as an option here. Anyone else? Dave.
I would add that one of the things that I see as central to this is faculty participation. So one of the things we want to do is to try to get some feel for where our units are with respect to that. How do our respective faculties react, or how will they react to having some different schedule? If we do something that sounds noble and wonderful and then nobody shows up, or it dilutes the number of faculty showing up to commencement, then we really haven't done anything positive for the students overall.
Yep, so please, everyone, one of the things we would like to know, and you can poll your students and state this online in the discussion, if the master's and PhD hooding ceremony is held separate before the main ceremony, would the graduate students also come to the main ceremony if told that they were expected to? Would the faculty come to the main ceremony? One possibility would be to keep the PhD hooding in the main ceremony and have a separate one for master's students. And that would be one way to get the faculty from the graduate programs to come to the main ceremony as well, because that's where the PhD hooding is taking place. So we need to think about these incentives and how the students and the faculty would look at these changes. Debu, go ahead.
This needs a significant change in schedule also, because we usually have the exam week extend through Saturdays, and there are some faculty who actually have their exams on Saturdays. So if we are having the commencement on Saturday, then that exam schedule also needs to be shifted a little bit so that the students are done by Friday, I guess, and then they can attend the ceremony. And the faculty are also free to attend the ceremony. And so that is an important consideration that we need to keep in account.
Yes, thank you for reminding us. David.
I think, keeping the graduation ceremony, holding it to the current length is really important, not just for maintaining faculty participation, but for student participation as well. Most years, about a quarter of my students don't go to their own graduation because they feel it's too long.
And boring.
Well, yeah, exactly. So it's not just encouraging faculty participation, but making sure the students are there as well. And so I think adding any length overall to the time of the graduation ceremony runs a risk of diminishing student participation as well.
Yep. And so one of the questions is whether the ceremony should actually be shortened by having the PhD hooding in the separate ceremony and having them simply march in the main one. Of course, again, there's a risk that they wouldn't come. So we need to strike a good balance here. Who said it?
Lily.
Lily, please come up.
Thank you. I'm the assistant registrar for graduation and curriculum. And one thing about a Saturday ceremony is that a lot of students that come to the ceremony actually, they mention to us, is it okay I don't come to rehearsal because I have to work that day? So we do have a number of students who do work on Saturdays, and at the commencement ceremony, they're happy that it's on Sunday so that they can attend. Another thing, too, I think that we've had this discussion quite a bit in the office of the registrar, and I don't know if having it on Saturday, of course, staff do complain, but I think we've been doing it for so long that nobody really, I mean, it's an expectation. The thing is, I think we've talked about considerably is if CTC was split off and the certificate and associate's degree had their own ceremony, because there's a large bulk of students within that college. And then the bachelor's students, master's, and PhDs could be together, because a lot of times the bachelor's degree students are thinking about going on for master's programs. They've had classes with those students, and they can see what they can achieve, you know, future education. So those are some points I'd like to point out.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right, we'll continue this online. So if you have any other thoughts, please post them. Next discussion item, an update on the general education revitalization. David, take it away.
I sincerely hope that at some point or another in the last couple of weeks you've seen signs somewhere that says something about general education information meeting. If you have, good. If you haven't, then oh boy. Okay. But if you haven't been able to make one of those, there would be one more general education information session that will take place tomorrow at 1 o'clock up at the College of Natural Science and Mathematics. I've attended a couple of these, and they've been very useful with respect to getting different groups of faculty's concerns and thoughts on the table. And I've been very pleased to note that they've been largely very constructive with respect to the issues that are raised. One of the big concerns, of course, that we have is any kind of changes happening to general education involve a certain amount of allocation of resources, which is, of course, fraught. One issue that we face is that the General Education Revitalization Committee, GERC, has only two people on it that were on the original GERC, the original General Education Revitalization Committee. And so we find ourselves, to a certain extent, revisiting some issues that we visited first a couple of years ago when GERC first started. So that's going to be an issue as we move forward. What we're building to right now is a poll that the GERC has put together, and we'll be asking all faculty to participate from UAF, and that's that poll is targeted for October 15th. GERC has piloted the poll with some focus groups, that is, friends of people on the committee, to get some idea of how information, how valuable the information might be on it, and get some comments. So we think we're good to go for that poll. I would encourage you, and I would encourage you, your faculty, the folks that you're representing, to make time to feed into that. This poll is not just for people who are offering core curriculum classes. They are for people who are teaching students who have taken core curriculum classes. It's not just for the producers of the classes; it's for the consumers as well. So I would encourage you to keep your eye out for that poll when it comes around, and to take the poll yourselves, and to encourage the rest of your faculty to take that poll as well. Alex, I notice you're here, so I would like to just give a shout out to you in case you wanted to add something to this, since you've been to these GERC committee meetings as well.
And the only thing that I would add to echo David's encouragement to take the poll is there should be sort of, you know, check the box, but also a space for comments. And the comments will be really important in guiding the committee's decisions, because if we just get a yes or no, we won't necessarily know the reasons behind that. And so please, I know it'll take a little extra time, but if you can fill in the comments, that'll be really helpful.
Is there any discussion? Cecile.
No, just where's the, can you give the location for tomorrow?
It's at 1 o'clock in Reichardt 210.
201.
Oh, on my calendar it says 210. All right, 201, what he said.
Big lecture hall.
Anyone else? All right, I propose that we change the order of the agenda. Our guest speaker, Dana Thomas, is here, and he was scheduled for 2:20. So I would like to go ahead and let him speak to us. He has 20 minutes for presentation and discussion with us, and then we will return to the other discussion items. Dana, please.
Thank you for that accommodation. I appreciate that. I just wanted to reintroduce myself in my new role. One of many different hats I've worn over the years. So in case you have not heard, I am now the Vice President for Academic Affairs at UI Statewide. So quite a change from my long history, 31 years at UIF, Faculty of Mathematics and Statistics, eventually Vice Provost, and now this job. So one of the common themes that's going on up at UA Statewide, and I know it's been reverberated here, is the Strategic Direction Initiative, SDI. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about SDI, what the next steps are, and why you should play in that conversation. And then a couple of questions for you. And in addition, you know, you've heard about SDI at the president's convocation, so I thought there might be questions, so I'm here to answer some questions as well, of course. So the next step, I think you all know that something like 80 listening sessions occurred across Alaska, input from students, staff, faculty, alumni, the public. So a lot of verbal material, all of that was collected, converted to Word document, if you can believe that or not, and was sent to the leadership at each of the institutions. And then a leadership group that involved all the governance groups and alumni met this summer on July 23rd and tried to sort out kind of the major themes or topic areas that came up from all of that information collection. In addition to the listening sessions, of course, we had the Fisher Report, which was a report generated by a consultant shortly after President Gamble came on board, a McTaggart Report that was a follow-on, and Terry McTaggart has worked with several of the institutions over the years and made some recommendations. And then institutional data, statewide information, some of which I'll speak to today as I get to questions for you all. And from that came this sort of, let's say, collection of themes and bullet areas, and then a variety of questions intended to be thought-provoking. So those are in draft form now, and on or about October 15th, so coming soon, will be delivered to each of the three institutions and all governance groups a list of those draft themes, bullet areas, and thought-provoking questions, asking for your input on what are the highest priorities among those, which should be handled internally within individual institutions, and which of them where it might be useful to have across all institution solutions. Okay. I'll give you an example of each in my opinion, but these are decisions, you know, that we're asking your opinions on as well. So I would very much like to see the University of Alaska as a whole communicate to potential students and their parents, the state government, the public in general, what we think are the initial collegiate level entry courses, particularly in math and English, and what placement scores get you there. So that's one that I would like to see a commonality. All right? One where I expect distinctions is with regard to what are our specific intentions and how will we handle student advising. Simply by scale issues, the way UAA will handle academic advising has to be distinctly different than it will be at UA Southeast. Okay? So there's one where you expect differences, the other one possibility for similarity. Okay? So that's the kind of thing. What are the highest priorities and which ones do you think we should try to achieve commonality across all three institutions? Which ones need a distinctly separate consideration within an institution? Right? We will ask for your feedback from that by November 30th, so about 45 days. So it's a fairly short turnaround, and you will have to think about how to organize to get such feedback to us. That's one of the key messages for today, is kind of laying out that time frame. After that, we will sort through that new information, find the commonalities that we receive from all of the different groups, and then see where specific groups, perhaps the faculty as a whole, at all three institutions say this is a priority, but nobody else does, right? Well, we will want to pay attention to that. Does that make sense? You're a significant constituent, and we want to pay attention to that. So, you know, it'll be weighing that information and then coming up with a set that, again, we'll come back to you and say, okay, this is what we have heard from you all, and these will be the major target areas. Does that make sense? Then, what do we do about them? That largely will be a conversation in each of those areas. Many will take academic action by faculty senate. Others will be just changes in business, perhaps, within student services. So that's the next steps. So I wanted you to have some familiarity and expectation in that regard. Why play in this process? Right? You know, when I, at 31 years at UAF, I've seen a lot of presidents come and go. a lot of chancellors come and go. And this is really the first time that I can recall that a president came and said, I want to hear from everybody before just laying out a new strategic plan. So he really did try to come up with a process where he's listening. So in the vast majority of other presidents, he and their staff laid out a draft strategic plan, vetted it a little bit, and said, okay, this is it. Didn't really ever get much buy-in, in my opinion. That's just my sense of it over time. This one, through the process, we're hoping to get more buy-in. So I would argue, and I understand this word is has two edges to it, this is an opportunity. Okay? I also understand that it means taking some time from other things that you're doing, but I do believe that if you play in this, we can make some forward progress on things that you all have been wanting to make some forward progress on. I do believe it's an opportunity. So why is change needed? Many reasons, I suppose. I have sent to the Faculty Alliance a list of national ratings and gradings and things that put Alaska in a negative light. I'll mention a couple of those here, but I believe Jennifer and David have copies of that, and they can share it with you as they see fit. The Washington Post, not a huge educational association, but the Washington Post in June of this year reported that Alaska had the lowest completion rate in the nation for higher education. Community colleges, bachelor's degrees, everything. Lowest rate in the nation. Right? That's not good press for us, of course, especially if we're trying to recruit students from outside the state. At the same time, if you look at the federal IPEDS data, that's the data we all report every year, every state does, it shows that Alaska has among the very highest cost per student. Right? Bad combination, right? That gets you, those are the sorts of things that get your attention. The governor reads these things. The legislature reads these things. We need to be prepared to respond, yes, we're aware of that, and yes, we're working on it. Right? So that's part of the purpose of SDI, is to recognize those things that we need to work on. A key fact here, nowhere in those ratings or gradings or anything does it say that our students are not learning. Right? So it's about other issues like completion, some of which we don't have full control over. I understand that. But it means that we need to be paying attention to it. There's other changes going on within higher education that get our attention and cause us to reflect on what other changes we might need to make. So you may or may not have heard about massively open online courses. And so I wanted to just give you a little input on that. There was a faculty member at Stanford offered one of the first massively open online courses on artificial intelligence. He had over 50,000 students worldwide enroll in that course. The second course he offered was on creating your own browser and had over 160,000 students enroll in that course. 23,000 completed that single offering. That's a powerful statement. If you're like me, you sat back and said, specialized area, computer science, information science, I'm not going to get too worried about that. Right? Then out comes a Chronicle article that the Gates Foundation has provided $5 million in funding for those who want to offer MOOCs, massively open online courses, for general education courses. That's a huge shift in the game, right? Another major shift in the game, now there are several groups doing this, Udacity, Coursera, some of you can probably mention others. Those are two of the large ones. Colorado State University, with whom we have an ongoing working arrangement for vet med degrees, okay, has decided to accept credit for some of those. Right? That's a question I have for you. Should we? We've received an invitation to offer courses in Coursera. Should we? If a student takes some of those courses, should we grant credit for them? Why or why not? You get the idea? Those are important questions in the future of higher education. And they're ones that need to be decided by faculty senate. So big change is going on. We can't ignore that. Right? You know that oil production's declining, right? And right now there's nothing in the longer-term pipeline, so to speak, to take us out of that. And so paying attention to these kinds of issues and dealing with them before we get to any sort of budget issue will be important. So that's really a big part of the motivation, right? To why should we think about some of these things now? SDI is an opportunity to address some of them. We have one particular one that I will raise with you. Maybe a couple. Currently, each of the three institutions has three levels of remediation going on, English and math. Right? The cut scores differ a little bit. The titles and the content of the courses differ a little bit. But fundamentally, there's three levels of remediation going on at each of the MAUs. UA data indicates that prepared students have a six-year graduation rate of about 35%. Right? Students placed in the lowest level of remediation, those furthest from the collegiate level of entry, have a six-year graduation rate of about 10%. Right? Now, they're in the lowest level of remediation. We know it's going to take them longer, right? Okay. However, it kind of begs the question, are we doing the ethical thing by admitting such students in that lowest level of preparation in the baccalaureate programs? That's if there is such a low success rate in achieving a baccalaureate, some do, should we give them an intermediate goal? So, one of the elements that comes into this is national research indicates that students with that lowest level of preparation have higher motivation and higher completion if they are instead engaged in coursework where that math and English content in particular is content driven. That's almost the definition of our certificate and applied associate programs. So if a student's studying culinary arts and they're taking their math section, it's embedded in there, they're changing a recipe from feeding 5 to feeding 12. The motivation's very clear as to why they're learning that. That's what I mean by content driven and embedded coursework. Again, this is something that would have to be decided by the Faculty Senate, but it's a question that I would raise. The other questions, of course, are should we put some of those courses out on massively open online courses? We have an invitation from COSERA. That is something that would have to originate with faculty and department, but it's one that I would ask. With that, I'll take questions. I'll be happy to share that remedial education summary that cuts across all three institutions and UA as a whole and shows where those students, which programs those students completed, and et cetera.
Rainer.
What specific role do you see the Faculty Senate taking in the next 45 days?
Receiving that list of themes, bullets, and let's say thought-provoking questions, and prioritizing the which ones need the most attention, in your opinion, and which ones need an internal institution solution, and which ones should we consider having across all of the institution solutions. So that's what I'm looking for. Is there a follow-on, Reiner? You're thinking
I'm thinking, how the hell are we going to do this? The obvious way is to have a show of hands. How many think this, But, in terms of anything really useful, do you make any suggestions about how we operate this to make that information? Most more than just this. Knee-jerk reaction among faculty senators.
Many of the things on those lists are things that you're all familiar with, and so I think for most of them you'll already have opinions. They won't be so knee-jerk. That's my sense. The common placement issue, I saw a lot of people nodding their head, for instance, one of them.
So what you're saying is you think that actually it'll be relatively easy for the Faculty Senate to give answers to many of these things that really do represent a cross-section of the faculty.
I'm hopeful.
The whole thing just terrifies the heck out of me. But
how you provide the information is up to you.
Cindy.
I want to respond to your talk at your discussion of what you're calling remedial education, and just remind you that in Alaska in general, we're using the developmental model, which means we approach developing the whole student. And I just spoke to you about some data that we have gotten in our department, and I don't have the list in front of me, so I'll just try to mention two things that I think are relevant. One is that this data that we got from PEAR suggests that at some level, 56% of our students are taking some form of developmental education. Now that might be a Math 105 or developmental Math 105. It might be a reading course. It might be a support course of some kind. But 56% was the number that we got. That's a pretty high number if we're eliminating all students who need any kind of developmental ed. The other thing is that the material that we got is suggesting, at least from the way I read the data, and I'm an English teacher, not a statistics person, but that students who do take our developmental classes and go on to the subsequent class succeed, and we're talking about C or higher, at a higher percentage rate than students who simply walk into the class from day one place. So say a student placed in English 111 versus a student who took DEVE 070 then went to 111, that percentage of those who took the DEVE class would be higher, by a small amount, but higher. And so I think some of the data we have flies in the face of some of the national data, because I think we may be measuring a different type of education.
Yeah, you're talking about course sequencing. I'm talking about completion. So they're distinctly different topics.
Right, and we don't have completion data to graduation because we weren't able to track all of our students in that way, but we do have completion to 24 credits. Todd.
Just a quick question, since Alaska's a bit different than the rest of this nation, I guess you would say, and we are kind of a full-service university. I know that the Board of Regents was like saying no new programs at a time, but what about something like occupational endorsements? Because if you kind of look at the the catalog, there's not a whole lot that are offered, and this having a lot more occupational endorsements, a lot more pathways into careers, this may be a way to address where you don't have to have as much, you know, the core to get in originally to start a pathway into a career. And then if you want to continue on, then you start the core, and then you get into the certificates and the associates and the bachelor's and on up. Any, you know, comments or feelings about improving or increasing the number of occupational endorsements?
I certainly, there wouldn't be any objection. Those don't have to go to the regents, so the regents don't even play in that conversation. That's entirely up to this group, I would say. So. Certainly, it would play positively for the workforce conversation that often happens with the legislature. I think many of you know me. I'm a bit more of a purist. I think a higher education is not just about getting a job while the job's important. It's really about developing a life. So that's sort of my own personal philosophy. But certainly, statewide would have no problem with additional occupational endorsement, generally viewed positively.
Cecile?
I think sort of a general comment, but I think a lot of universities have gotten themselves in kind of into a corner, and that would include us, and that there's more and more pressure to, you know, to increase revenue, and so you bring in more and more students who aren't prepared. And then, you know, we're surprised when some of those students can't finish. Well, they weren't prepared for this kind of work to begin with, and some of them, you know, may not have the whatever drive, passion, interest, whatever discipline to do 4 years of college. There's sort of this assumption that this is for everybody, and it isn't. But the more people we bring in from all walks of life, the more people we're going to have who will not get all the way through.
So I guess I would agree that a baccalaureate's not for everybody, but I honestly believe that through our occupational endorsement certificates and applied associates in particular, there is something for most everyone.
Oh, yeah. No, I was talking BA
Yeah. And so that's part of the reason I asked this question about this lowest level of preparation. Are we really doing the right thing? Several people, let's see, who all went? David, you went to that one meeting. Was there somebody? I'm trying to remember if somebody else here went. I want to reflect back on something Todd said, and that is, Alaska's different, or unique, is something we often get. Boy, the last meeting I attended, every institution is standing up saying 50-60% of our students are non-traditional or underprepared. Or, you know, it's the same exact list for every institution that we've heard from. And these are major institutions and major systems across the United States. And so we are not as unique as we think we are, all right? Some of the elements that are unique is our geographic distribution and access. Now, those are real challenges. But the underprepared, non-traditional students, we are not unique.
But Dana, I believe we are unique in a way because we don't have a system of community colleges in the whole state. We just have the one community college, Prince William Sound. But so everyone who might go to community college first has to come to the universities.
That, again, that's part of the reason I asked the question I did, right? Is are we really giving the best guidance there? The other part of that is if we see somebody who is in a baccalaureate program and it's clear it's not going to work out for them, do we redirect them well, right? And I'm not convinced we generally do a very good job of that. So if somebody came in thinking I'm going to be an engineer and it's very clear they're not going to be an engineer, Process Tech is a wonderful degree program with a wonderful career path that is pretty well aligned with engineering. But do we ever have that conversation? Right? You see what I'm saying? And do we have it sufficiently often? All right. So, I mean, those are important questions, I think, that we need to be kind of tackling.
Anyone else? Yes, Debu.
Wearing them out here.
Sorry?
Go ahead.
Oh. I just wanted to kind of clarify a little bit about this open source classes you mentioned. What you are thinking that open source classes are going to be a good thing in the system or
that's a great question. I don't know how this is going to play out. I don't, you know, nobody can really predict that, I don't think. But the fact that you know, the population that is buying into that just continues to grow is truly remarkable. If you haven't seen it online, there's a futuristic-looking view of this. It's called EPIC. I will try to get that that website here for it to be distributed. But you know, it's almost like reading science fiction. It talks about Apple and Amazon joining and forming a new education base, and you know, it's pretty remarkable. But it's science fiction at this point. I can't answer. Is it? You know, that's why I think when we see another institution stepping forward and accepting credit, rather than waiting and being the last in on that, we should start examining that. That's all I've suggested at this point.
No, my major question was, what is the role of a faculty member then, if there is an open source class, and we ask the students, we give the students credit for that class, what am I doing here? Is my major question on this one. We need to examine that first before we get into delving, thinking even about open source classes, because those are business models.
Yeah, I mean, it also, we have the same thing happen with students that transfer after 2 years into the university. You know, one could ask, you know, isn't it very much the same?
Just a point of clarification, I believe it was massively open online courses, not open source. Open source sort of implies a community-driven supply of information.
Massively open online courses.
Like the MIT one, right? MIT one? Massachusetts Institute of Tech?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. I apologize.
MIT just has open source information for all their classes, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they take a different path to actually offer MOOCs.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, I'm very impressed that you deal with the bigger questions. I really like it. I agree with your complete assessment there. Just two comments, this time from the side of also showing some positives we have in the Arctic or in Alaska, is that when we compare ourselves with the other Arctic nations that have similar issues to deal with, we're actually quite in the lead. So despite knowing that providing education in the sub-Arctic regions is a very costly, very expensive, and probably is a business that has failed. There's a lot of risk involved, also for students. We're still doing quite well. So I would like to put us also a little bit more in the North American perspective and much more in the circumpolar or even global perspective where we can offer these type of things. You provided some very nice statistics on the failure rates of undergraduates and how the placement scores fit in. I would be very interested in having that view also for the GRE scores on a graduate level, because our feeling is that GRE scores are really not meaningful, and they actually have the same issue that they're not all performing very well just because you have high GRE scores. So anyway, that's some thoughts of mine, but in general, I'm very impressed you go that route. Thank you.
Thanks. I just wanted to read the list of universities that have already signed on to COSERA as an example, and that's the one we have the invitation from. Brown University, Columbia University, Emory University, Ohio State University, University of British Columbia, University of California, Irvine, University of Florida, University of London, University of Maryland at College Park, University of Melbourne, University of Pittsburgh, Vanderbilt. You get the idea. They've already signed on and are offering 5 courses with COSERA.
Which of their for-profit?
No? I don't think.
Okay, we need to wrap this up, but this will be an ongoing conversation through the year, and anyone wishes to discuss, move any of this onto our online discussion board, please feel free to do that. Dana, thank you very much for joining us and for talking about these subjects with us. We have skipped over a motion, the new motion in our agenda. I would like to return to that now. This is a motion from the Curricular Affairs Committee. It says that the UAF Faculty Senate moves to amend the academic policy regarding undergraduate probation. All right. Rainer, are you prepared to summarize this for the group?
We should do this.
All right. This is essentially a clarification. This is not a change of practice. But we need to clarify this for the benefit of the students and their advisors so they know how probation is applied to the summer session courses. Yes, Orion.
If I take a winter semester or Maymester, does that count as a semester for the purposes of this?
That's correct. They're lumped into the following semesters. Okay, so this refers to basically 3 major academic semesters. Okay, and those are fall, spring, and summer. It doesn't fit. If it's not one of those, it's lumped somehow into one of the regular semesters. Did I get that right, Libby?
So that's current practice, but I'm trying to understand where it says that here.
It doesn't say anything about them.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's done. That's done on purpose. So just not to even raise those issues, basically.
Anything else? Seeing none, let's vote on the motion. All those in favor of passing this motion, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Any abstentions? All right, the motion carries. I recommend that we defer the last discussion item for our next meeting. That item was on posting course syllabi online in a central repository. I can go ahead and start the discussion online or at least show you what the topic is, and then we can schedule a discussion in our next meeting. We have the next item on our agenda as governance reports. Is there someone from staff council who wishes to make a report? Is there someone from ASUAF? Mari Freitag, please come up. Any that you find convenient.
Hi, everyone. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Mari Freitag. I'm currently the president of ASUAF Student Government here on campus. And I also sit on the board of Regents as well. So I haven't been back here to report in a while, actually. I think my vice president came here last time. But basically what we're focusing on this year, this is my second year in student government. I'm trying not to do the same thing I did last year because that's just kind of insane. So I'm focusing a lot more on student outreach. And so I'm trying to get students to come to me and student government officials to basically talk about the problems they have with the university. And solicit as much feedback about anything and everything from them as possible. It's probably one of the more useful functions that we have because I have lots of really great working relationships with administrators and people in different departments. So I'm trying to capitalize on that as much as possible. A few things that we've done so far this semester is we've had a few candidate debates for state legislature. We have one more. We've had three already. We have one more, and I believe it's for House District 1 and 38. And that's on Tuesday from at 6 o'clock. So next Tuesday, I believe it's, I don't know what day it is. I can guess, but I think it's the 15th or 16th. But it's next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow. So they've been really great so far, so I'd encourage anybody that's available to come to that. So another thing we did, we allocated $50,000 for the Nanuk Terrain Park that's going on under Butrovich, and that came out of our carry forward account. It was kind of a pledge from the student government to partner with Mike Sprague's and a couple private donors. And so that got passed a couple weeks ago, so we're very excited about that. It's already got some mounds on the hills. Let's see. I'm also involved with, many of you probably are familiar with the issue, but the reorganization of the Diversity and Equal Opportunity and Multicultural Affairs and Women's Center offices. I've been pretty, I was involved with it a lot at the beginning of the semester. It's been kind of a lull in activity for the most part lately, but I hopefully will be sitting on, there's going to be a task force for the Diversity and Multicultural Affairs office that I'm going to try and get the chancellor to put a temporary office somewhere for students because it was kind of a really important thing for students to have a safe space that they felt comfortable in. So I'm trying to get that to happen. Whether it happens this year or next year is a different story, but we'll figure it out. Let's see. I'm trying as much as possible to get students involved in on-campus things like athletics events, so we're doing a lot of face painting and barbecues and lots of tradition stuff, like Nanuk traditions. We had a great Starvation Gulch again this year, if anybody came to it. It was really fun. We had 6 fires, which is the max we can have. Last year we had 3, so it was pretty cool. And then lastly, we're just reorganizing our Senate. Right now, currently we have 20 members, and the students voted to reduce that to 14 last semester. And so we're reorganizing the way our committees work and how we're electing people. So other than that, any questions?
Any questions for Murray? All right. Thank you very much. And from UNAC, Debu, would you like to make any comments?
Thank you, Jennifer. Excuse me. Thank you, Jennifer. There are only 2 things that I need to bring to everybody's attention. One is especially Chancellor Rogers' recommendation that faculty senate members need to get involved with Board of Regents, more, and to really bring our issues to the Board of Regents, faculty issues, so that they understand where the faculty stand. That's one. And I was actually going to do that, and he did that already, so I thank the Chancellor for that. Second is, there is a health care questionnaire going around by Abel, and it will really be helpful if the faculty fill that out. It's online. I believe 13 or 14 questions, shouldn't take long. But it will impact how we progress towards the future on the healthcare issues. So I'll request all the faculty members or your constituents to to fill out that questionnaire so that we can see what the response is. So far, we have gotten a good response out of it, but we need all the as many faculty to fill it out because it's our healthcare. Other than that, I am always available for any questions or as far as UNAC is concerned and how we can be of any help, any assistance. So my extension is 5339. Please feel free to give me a call, and anything you have, if I can bring it to the attention of everybody, that will be great. Any questions for me? Thanks.
All right. Jane Weber, do you have any comments from UAFT?
My only comment's about the Joint Healthcare Committee, and we'll be meeting, the statewide committee will be meeting next week for 2 days, and it's to help to try to set the rates for next year's health care. So it's not a fun job.
It's all right. You get a pat on the back.
Yeah.
All right. I have managed to skip over another agenda item, public comments and questions. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak to the Faculty Senate? Yes, please come up. My apologies for skipping over this.
Hi, my name is Dani Shepherd. In respect for the fact that we are running over, I'll reserve my comments until the next meeting. But I did want to introduce myself. I'm a faculty member in psychology, but I come today with my hat of the faculty athletics representative and just wanted to introduce you to myself and to this position. It is a chancellor-appointed position. It's an NCAA-required position at every campus. The NCAA tasks this position with three priorities. One, to ensure the academic integrity within the athletics program. So it's my role to ensure that policies and procedures allow for the academic integrity to remain a priority within the athletics program. Also to serve as a member of the institutional control for the maintaining compliance within all NCAA regulations. So to make sure that as a university we have the infrastructure in place that provides for maintaining compliance with that. And then finally the third piece is to look out for the well-being of the students, the student athletes, and making sure that they don't get caught up in the politics surrounding athletics. So in any case, part of the layperson description is that I do serve as a liaison between the two, as a voice between the two. I do not work for the Department of Athletics. It is a chancellor-appointed position, and I report directly to him on this. And so I certainly can serve as a liaison. So student athletes come to me about issues, and faculty can also as well. So other comments I will reserve till the next meeting, but just wanted to introduce myself to you all.
Thank you, Dani. We'll make sure that you have a chance next meeting.
I just received an email from the GERC chair, Jonathan Rosenberg, who is reporting that actually the next information meeting for the CNSM, it will be Wednesday at 1 o'clock, not tomorrow at 1 o'clock. So my apologies. That's what he just told me in an email. It's right here. So I'm just reporting what he said to me. Reiner, do you know that it is tomorrow?
Ah, the room's reserved.
Okay, then it's tomorrow. Never mind.
All right, so everyone double check.
Yeah, double check. There's also one more on Thursday at Interior Illusions Campus down on Geist Road.
During the dead hour.
Right.
It makes sense. I'm just...
Okay. We'll all double check.
Information? You just want to make sure no one shows up?
Not that sort of guy.
There's also another information meeting at the Interior Illusions Campus on Thursday.
All right. We go on to members' comments, questions, announcements. Does anyone have an announcement or a comment? I also opens up to committee chairs who wish to make remarks. No? We are over time, so seeing none, this meeting is adjourned.
humidity and all of it really hard.
Yeah.
The arrow.
Oh, really? Oh.
All of us will kind of drag this down the next.
Yeah.
Sucks not being able to breathe.
Yeah.
It makes more sense for it to be Tuesday than Wednesday. I just got this, like, oh, really? Well,
even the amount
better
of
not
to be lost there. It's got to be.
Yeah.
You're trying to write or teach or whatever, right?
I'll look for it.
Let me just write back to John and then just kind of make sense. Just
okay. Do you mind if I just walk over there with you?
Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, that's right.
Good to see you again.
Yeah.
Hey, Cecil. Let me see you. This is a great but definitely your voice is one that we are missing.
Like this much school event stuff to go through. No, that's maybe a third or a quarter. I have a ton of stuff from them.
Does that help?
I haven't even gotten anything from CRC yet.
Yeah, they know each other.
Pretend I didn't say it. Just pretend I didn't say it.
Overlapping calls or something. That's a good point. I think it's already kind of